Welcome to EdTech Insiders, where we speak with founders, operators, investors, and thought leaders in the education technology industry and report on cutting-edge news in this fast-evolving field from around the globe. From AI to XR to K-12 to L&D, you'll find everything you need here on EdTech Insiders. And if you like the podcast, please give us a rating and a review so others can find it more easily. I'm here at ASUGSB with Adrian Ridner, the CEO of Study.com. Welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about Study.com.
Hi, thank you for having me, Alex. Study.com is an online learning platform. We help over 30 million learners and educators on the platform every month achieve their breakthroughs in learning. And it's really exciting because what we build, we're able to help students from K-12, higher ed, and professionals, wherever they are in their educational journey, we help them at Study.
I got the opportunity to speak to Dana Bryson, who works with you in social impact, and I was astounded at the range, at the scope of what Study.com does. It's really broad, and there's a lot of social impact pieces. What have you been up to recently that you're excited to share?
Absolutely. And Dana and the whole company does a lot of work. So if you talked to her before, we are doing a lot of work, especially on teacher diversity and teacher shortage with our Keys to the Classroom initiative. We're also doing a lot of work on access, equal access to degrees with our Working Scholars program, which is also geared towards people being able to finish their degree and earn it at no cost, no debt to them. And those are two initiatives that continue to scale across the country. On the other side, what we're doing on the product side that's really exciting is two things. One, we acquired a tutoring company, Enhance Prep, a little bit ago, and we're scaling that not just from our consumer side, but now to help schools, districts, and universities to really be able to close the learning gap. So what we're noticing is when districts are able to use our curriculum, our drills, and our tutoring, now the tutors know what the teachers are trying to teach. The teachers know what kind of support the students needed from the tutors. It gives them much better overall 360 support of the students. So I'm excited about that. And then I'm super excited about what we're doing with AI. We already had a lot of adaptive learning on the platform, but we can really do a lot of new things that we're prototyping and experimenting. And I'm pretty excited about those as well.
It strikes me, I think you're a little bit of an unusual founder in that you're an engineer founder and you have been the CEO for the entire length of the company, which is quite a while. And I think that's because you're bootstrapped, right? You don't take investment. Tell us a little bit about what that's like, all of those specific ideas.
Yes, I'm a software engineer turned, you know, edtech entrepreneur, and we bootstrapped the company, my co-founder, Ben Wilson, and I. What we like to say is we've been working together in the education space for 20 years now. I would say the current iteration of Study, the SaaS business built on top of micro video lessons and adaptive learning, is probably closer to 7-8 years old. We've had this our kind of third iteration in the space, but we've been absolutely working together and try to make a difference to make education accessible and open doors to the life-changing impact of education for the last 20 years together. And, you know, obviously an amazing team. This iteration is by far the most impactful and the biggest scale. And when we tell people that, I think Deborah Quazzo here at the conference last year mentioned we're one of the few bootstrap unicorns she's met in the space, we take that as a compliment. It lets us set our North Star and be able to follow our values on how we want to have a sustainable growing company that's really making a difference.
It is really unusual. Yeah, bootstrapped unicorn. It's really exciting. So you mentioned AI and you have an engineering background. I'm sure you know AI from inside and out. You mentioned you've done adaptive testing for a long time, but this generation of AI just blows everything we've seen before out of the water, including tutoring opportunities as well as personalized learning. Tell us a little bit about what you're thinking as you see Gen AI sort of take over the world and at this conference.
Absolutely, yeah. As a software engineer, I like to say I'm an informed optimist on AI. I know enough. I work with neural nets. I've coded them, trained them enough to understand the downsides of what the technology can struggle with. But I also am optimistic because I understand the real power where this is a step-up basis on what we can do. And I think that from my perspective, there's a lot of things that, as you said, it puts the early days of adaptive learning, you know, it looks like child's play with what we can do right now. We're doing several things. One is, I like to say, is adaptive learning on steroids. So we're combining billions of our data points with the massive content library that we have and then using Gen AI to make that learning path even better. If you think about what was our personalization before, you have to customize something for a learner in essentially near real time. And even if you had a lot of data point, you have to have pre-created all of the pathways, either practice or content delivery, whatever, to put them together. Now, you can still do all that, but let's say that you were missing, you know, drills on long fractions and long division, and we only have 10. We can have the system say, make 25 more like this. By the time you get to number 9, there'll be 25 more. You won't have any idea that we didn't have that pathway because you were struggling with something that maybe most other users didn't. And that's just an example for history. It can create flashcards in real time. So the amount that we can do, especially if we already have master expert created content at the scale that we do with millions of materials, we can use that to train it to generate other things in real time that will help the different learning paths. And it can truly be dynamic and the real essence of personalized. So that's one example. But also I'm very excited about 25% of our subscribers are teachers. We're in over 10,000 school districts. The usage there and some of the things that we're releasing are amazing. We can essentially take the syllabus from your LMS, combine that with all the understanding of what we have in our platform, and create a perfect outline of what you should be assigning every micro lesson, every drill. I think that we're going to be able to do so much with the discovery and personalization. My guess is in a few quarters, search on our site for teachers is going to be irrelevant because we're able to showcase everything they need before they need it. The other exciting thing is people think about generative AI as like what it can produce. And that's certainly a big part of it. But when, you know, Google actually released the initial, you know, GPT, generative pre-trained transformer technology in 2017 with Bird, it was about understanding language better and the large language models. And that was for search. So what it can do in terms of taking action and as a user interface where you just tell it what you want. So think of what we're doing now with teachers where they can say, assign this lesson to my first period. They don't have to click on anything. They don't have to click on 17 buttons. They can just say that. It knows that if they say, this is my homework for my first section, that means the same as assign this to my first period. If it needs to do that, it can ask it, okay, what do you want for the homework? If I say next Wednesday or the 18th, it knows it's the same thing. Those things are going to make the user experience a lot more user-friendly for those that want to interact in that way. So there's a ton of ways that we're prototyping and using it. I would say my biggest concern, and I think something that I brought up a lot in conversations this week, is that we need to understand that not all learners are in the same spot. So for our early learners, for those that are in fourth grade, fifth grade, or below, we really have to be careful how we use the technology. And our children are not guinea pigs. And our kids learning are not guinea pigs. So we're talking about an adult, someone in college, maybe in a high school that can discern information. It can think critically about what makes sense or not. We can really do a lot of interesting things. Teachers, another example. But we really have to be super careful with early learning, young children, and do a lot more research, which is part of why we're doing a lot of research on everything I just said before we go launch it, just because it's cool and new. We really want to understand the implications and the outcomes that it's going to have downstream. You know, they call it hallucinations for a reason. They don't call it errors because, yes, there are mistakes, but there are mistakes that the AI believes that even though 100% wrong, it believes is 100% correct. And it will tell you so over and over again. And that's what is like a real person hallucinating. It's not an error or a mistake, right? So we have to be careful that we need people to be able to discern that as well.
One thing that I've heard sort of in the corners of this conference is the need for an LLM that's education specific or, you know, that is safe, that can work with these fourth and fifth graders who we have to be very careful with. And, you know, one of the barriers to that, or one of the enablers of that, we should say, is having a lot of data. So you've mentioned billions, thousands of schools and districts, kids all over the world. I've been wondering if companies with lots and lots of content and lots of interactions, and you're definitely in that category, have the capacity to train models with reliable content. And what might that look like in your mind?
That's a great point. I think that right now everyone is thinking about it either as using ChatGPT directly as a standalone user for your own productivity, right? Having it do things, or integrating it horizontally into existing platforms. But there has been some conversation of, could you create your own? And that's certainly something that, especially for us, would be very, very possible, given the extent of content that we already created and the different types and the data. And it's something that is worth exploring. Obviously, the cost today is not trivial. People glance over it. There's a reason Google didn't want to release it first. It's definitely expensive on the compute power, but that's going to come down, and that's going to come down pretty sharply. So I think that's definitely a possibility. The other thing that is important for me is combining the people aspect. I think short to medium term, having AI with our educator network, over 2,500, you know, educators, professors, teachers, tutors worldwide, the combination of the two, just like you're not going to replace a teacher in the classroom, is what's really going to make for the more interesting leaps in learning. So a custom trained, you know, large language model is definitely a possibility. And I think several of us will probably look into playing with that. But I would say I still would not take the human component out of the equation. And I mentioned yesterday, one of the things that gets lost in this conversation is we're still teaching people. If they're adults or if they're kids, there's a component to teaching that is about human empathy, is understanding that you didn't have food yesterday, or that you have shelter insecurity, or that you need more sleep before you can have the attention span to even understand this equation. And for a lot of children, you know, the teacher or the tutor is one of their, you know, often only trusted adults in their lives. So we have to also be mindful that as much as the Power AI is super exciting, and as an engineer and software engineer, I'm very excited. You know, I said about social impact programs. This is the one thing that I have gotten roped back into with the product and the tech team to really look at the strategy more broadly, because it is a step level function of the capabilities. But we have to remember there's people at the center of it. And ultimately, people learn from other people. People need that. This, you know, you ask the best teachers, what's their job? They don't tell you to instruction or to share knowledge. They tell you, my job is to build momentum for my students. Yes, it's knowledge transfer, but it's also self-belief, if confidence, it's motivation. And we can't forget that. Now, I think AI will enable us to build momentum for a lot of students at scale, and learning and coaching and tutoring together can really do some really powerful things. But there's people at the center of it, and we just have to be mindful of that as we continue to drive these technologies forward, especially in education.
Yeah, I think next year by this conference, that question is going to be the center. It's already beginning to be, but it's going to be the center of everybody's product questions and their models is, what can AI do? What do people have to do? What should people do? How can AI help education without even beginning to replace anything? We're all wrestling with it. I've heard it a lot at this conference, and it's such an important question. So what is the most exciting thing that you've seen at the conference? What has really lit your fire this year?
I will share that, but before I get that, one last thing, because what you just said reminded me of something else that I've been sharing that is really important, and it hasn't been said enough. I think the other thing we need to be mindful as we think about AI and this technology is how we need to include it in primary education. Especially in this country, we took way too long debating if coding should be a primary subject or not, besides math and English and science. We cannot take that long debating if AI and teaching kids from an early age about AI, how to use it, how it works, the details on how it works needs to be a primary subject, because I think it's being overlooked. It's going to, if we don't do it, it's going to really increase the inequality, both income inequality, overall inequality, not just in this country, but globally, right? I've lived in 4 countries, and I'm also concerned about the global impact of this, because if we don't do it, the learning velocity, the rate of learning that someone understands how AI works and can use it efficiently, and someone that don't, is going to be significantly increased, you know, chasm and gap that is going to be much harder to close than the current income inequality and overall inequality gap. So we have to really be mindful of that, and we have to get education in AI in our primary curriculum sooner rather than later. So sorry, you reminded me of that. Going back to your question, I think the most exciting thing for me as someone, you know, first generation entrepreneur originally from Argentina, moved in multiple countries, is this is the first year, and I've been here multiple years now, where I've seen a huge amount of first generation, especially immigrant entrepreneurs with great idea, terrific passion, just represented everywhere. Just the amount of diversity overall, not just of nationalities, but even women founders that I've seen this year, where I've had conversations, meetings, saw them in the competitions that we had. It was truly remarkable. And you can sense that as you're walking around and having conversations. And it's just something that really stuck, because I think that's going to lead to even faster innovation. And I think not just a US-centric view of the world, but a real global view of the world and learning, which is really exciting and something that, at least for me, felt different this year.
Yeah, I've noticed that too, and it is incredibly exciting. The ASU GSB Cup pitch competition last night was astounding. How many people were coming from different countries, were doing amazing things in their local markets that were then expanding, already had traction. It's wild, and I'm unused to that as well. It really feels like a different style of ed tech. Instead of it being about, you know, how's Pearson going to go to India, silly stuff like that, it's people are going local. It's really, really interesting. Adrian Ridner, this has been a blast. Thank you so much for being here with me, CEO of Study.com. Thanks for being here on EdTech Insider.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of EdTech Insiders. If you like the podcast, remember to rate it and share it with others in the EdTech community. For those who want even more EdTech Insider, subscribe to the free EdTech Insiders newsletter on Substack.
This season of EdTech Insiders is brought to you by Tuck Advisors. Tuck Advisors is a trusted name in education M&A, founded by serial entrepreneurs with over 25 years of experience starting, investing in, and selling companies. Tuck Advisors believes founders deserve M&A advisors who work as hard as they do.